time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
We know, Hugh Bonneville, all you were doing with your latest epic, I Came By, is simply channeling the versions of Hector's House. Dun da dun da 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 dun dun da dun dun. If you're not familiar, actually, Natasha Wanton, or indeed Jessica Burtis, with the awesome cartoon series, which was indeed animated marionette series, Hector's House. All about a dog called Hector, who has a countryside house with Kiki and Zsa. He often goes for his gun. He has all sorts of shallow things from that point of view. And apart from the fact that he doesn't actually chop up his victims and actually leave them and incinerate them, That's what I Came By is all about. Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Hello?
I was reading about that judge. People call him a saint.
He'd take on inquests on behalf of refugees.
It's a publicity stunt.
The elusive I Came By taggers are back to haunt the city's rich.
Fight the system, remember?
Can you think of anyone who might have cause to target you?
I was a judge, so yes, one or two people.
What difference have we really made?
Get inside their homes anytime we want.
You're 23, and what have you achieved?
You need to let me get on with my life.
If you want to keep writing, keep me out of it.
Whose side are you on? I broke into that judge's house
and I told you to keep me out of it.
I don't know what I saw.
Why would he have a letter addressed to Hector Blake?
I can't just give up the fight.
What are you doing outside his house anyway?
Hector's hiding something.
I really tried to be kind. But I had this rage that was so liberating, so empowering. Do you want to know what happened?
Well, Alex, firstly, I mean, this is a very, very, very bad movie. I mean, that's got to be said right away. But even so, good or bad, you shouldn't give too many spoilers in your introductions. I've said this
But it's
before.
Got Kelly MacDonald in the Kiki Ojaja role. Kelly MacDonald from Trainspotting.
Well, I have to say that it has Hugh Bonneville, it has Kelly MacDonald, it also has a plot that, frankly, it's set in contemporary London. It's directed by Babak Anbari. I came by while I would walk past if this movie was showing, and I honestly would spend no time on it because whether
Richard, you spend so much time tagging with your graffiti essay when you're not doing royal correspondence. I know I've seen you challenging through the London Underground, tagging the R things. I mean, you're almost like the Banksy of North London, really.
Well, if I'd only got Banksy's amount of remuneration that he gets from some of his work. I saw some of it when I was in Amsterdam. I have to say that the two graffiti artists, one of them is Toby Neely, played by George Mackay. He's a politically minded graffiti artist, and he breaks into upper class homes and he leaves the message, I came by, and he works with Jay, played by Perel Ascott. And the thing is, he goes into a home of a judge. The judge is Hector Blake. The judge is playing
representative Richard of the British upper class and the monarchy and all sorts of things. I mean, surely the metaphor is huge in this one. Huge.
Well, the metaphor is so obvious that it's actually rather puerile, but just a word of warning, Alex, you have given a spoiler, the fact that there is something unconventional going on in the house that I intended to hint at.
How often, Richard, do you get possible suspects close the door, slam the door in the face of policemen,
On the subject of doors, the strange thing when you have something rather odd in your home, putting it mildly, and indeed, throughout the film, by the end of the film, I mean, there's a positive
Richard, house. Richard, I used to broadcast in Dulwich. It's a standard thing. Margaret Thatcher went to live in Dulwich. In Dulwich, you have a cellar and you also have a room disguised as a panic room in which you actually keep any visitors, starve them and then chop them up in bits and actually flush them down the toilet. It's a natural. Wow. I thought Sarah Huntley will be able to actually confirm that's Dulwich.
And if I haven't finished my point about the door. The strange thing, and this is just advice, if anyone in Sarah included, greetings, I can't see you, but delighted you're there. The problem is that it's very easy to enter this house. On two occasions, two individuals enter the house by opening the front door, literally walking in. Well, I mean, considering that he's somewhat of a, shall we say, rather odd mentally, I think that we'd go along with that.
He's perfectly representative of a high court judge at the best of times, Richard.
Just too much. He plays squash with the police, the superintendent locally. So the problem is that when someone does tip off the police that there is something odd in the basement, they don't go into the basement because he drops the line that he might perhaps report them. I mean, this is a movie.
It's corruption, Richard. Corruption. The whole country's rife with corruption. I mean, Sarah, you teach in Dulwich. Surely this is par for the course for your average residents of Dulwich, basically.
Oh, it's been a week. I'd just like to say every member of the world goes to Dulwich. And it's quite an interest. Just one lesson. You go from, I'm not voicing any opinions, Ukrainians, Russians, Italians, Spanish.
High court judges.
Yep. Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. So
we know, Richard, we've been there. We've experienced the Dulwich thing. You can't sort of diss a movie on the basis of its cinema verite aspects. Jean Godard would be proud of this movie.
Well, I have to say that when, unfortunately, Toby disappears because he's been investigating the house, you see, when he gets into the basement, he thinks there's something there. Now, you've gathered from Alex that there perhaps might have been, or indeed possibly is. Anyway, he goes missing, shall we leave it like that, and the problem is that his fellow graffiti artist, Jay, who's in fact very distracted with his pregnant girlfriend, Naz, played by Barala Sethu, nonetheless starts showing an interest, and that involves Toby's widowed mother, Lizzie, played by, yes, the excellent Kelly MacDonald. Yes, she was in Trainspotting once. My goodness, what a movie compared to this. And so she tries to trace what's happened to Toby. She finds a letter that he's stolen from the judge's home. And so, of course, that connects to the judge. And she starts waiting outside to see who comes out. I mean, it is just the strangest movie. The judge, for example, picks up Omid, an Iranian asylum seeker, who...
He's a masseur, Richard. He's actually earning some pennies by giving a massage. It's very important.
He drugs him. But unfortunately, the Omid doesn't go to the police. And so, well, he tends to return. People have a habit of returning to this house and not coming out again. And as for what happens at the end of it, I mean, frankly, it's improbable. It's ridiculous. No acting is required. It is extraordinary. The point, or part of the point, is that the judge, like no doubt a lot of other upper class people, is haunted by his father. And there's a terrible portrait of his father above the mantelpiece in case.
Again, Hector's house, you know, it's all there, very much so.
Well, it's really. I mean, there's no logic in this movie. It's not exciting. That would have been the one saving grace.
Surely when the chap has to climb out of the window and he's seen by the character Kelly MacDonald, I mean, that was edge of the seat stuff. That was the equivalent to when Kiki the Frog was almost caught in Hector's toolbox. It was that level of panic.
Yes, because the mother is constantly parked outside the judge's home because she thinks that her son is inside, which
just like Zsa Zsa.
Might be the case. I mean, the whole movie is a superfluous piece of piffle. Let's talk about acting. It has no redeeming features at all. It isn't exciting, and it's certainly not realistic.
Well, the views of Richard Fitzwilliams may not represent the views of the station as a whole, especially when, as I said, it's a perfect adult version of the original classic French cartoon, Hector's house, which, Sarah, you might recall Hector's house, surely, the classic 5 minutes of wonderment that were brought by Hector, Zsa Zsa and Kiki the Frog on a regular basis.
Well, I remember Zsa Zsa and Kiki the Frog. In fact, I haven't thought about them for a long time. But for the younger members, what used to happen at the end of Hector's house, he used to say, "I'm a rather silly old Hector," or "I'm a very something Hector," according to what had happened in the... and so if we were...
It's just Hector, like I came by, quite literally. You know, Hector is stuck so there, and that could almost be the revolving.
That is a marvellous word I haven't heard for ages, which sums up this film, piffle.
Wow.
So Hector was ending an episode of Hector's house. He could say, "Well, I'm afraid it's all piffle." There we are. And that would be the end of it. Yes.
And on that profoundness, I'm probably going to go 6.5. But Jessica Burtis, in Dublin, did you have a chance to see I Came By?
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it. I think that from the caliber of like what I've seen some of these actors perform before, I expected this to have like a lot more nuance and be a lot more interesting. And I think I agree with Richard that like a lot of it was very heavy-handed on a lot of the themes. And I think that the idea of having like this kind of rebellious graffiti artist find something in a well-known judge's house is an interesting premise. Like, I think that that's like, there have been like rare cases of people finding things in people's houses when they broke in. So it's not completely unrealistic. I think how it carried out was a little unrealistic. Like, I kind of expected a bit more. It was still fun. I think that I could kind of just, instead of appreciating it as like a more of like a film, kind of trying to have like some interesting themes, I was like, oh, it's just a thriller. Like, it's just meant to be fun. And when I looked at it that way, it was just kind of, it was very easy to enjoy. I was surprised that like this serial killer judge, like actually like, spoiler, of course, like managed to kill this graffiti artist in one scene. Like, how? I don't know. I was shocked that they actually killed off this character, which was interesting because I feel like a lot of movies, you know, being a main character, you have a bit of plot armor. So that was interesting. But yeah, I think you have to kind of look at this as just a regular thriller movie. But I love Hugh Bonneville. I love him in lots of roles. I think he's just very eloquent, which is funny because he's like, he kind of acts the same in every role he's in. So it was kind of funny to see him like act the same way, but as a villain. Yeah, it was a bit strange, but I thought it was just fun.
Like Anthony Hopkins being a mass murderer who likes Chianti and Fava Beans, you know, Silence of the Lambs. Curious enough, Lecter as opposed to Hector. See where we're going here. Give yourself a treat in terms of, if you have a few moments, watch the YouTube episodes of Hector's House. It'll give you a whole new take on this movie. Natasha Wanton, what are your thoughts in Australia on this joyous celebration of serial killing, corruption, and so on?
I think I got about 20 seconds into the trailer and was already like, nope. I got horror vibes from it, and we all know my severe dislike of horror and that genre. It seemed... like, even from the trailer, I love Hugh Bonneville, but it didn't seem to gel right. So I've not seen the film. I think it would be very bizarre for me to see him in a villain role, especially going on what Jessica's just said about how he played it like he plays his other roles. I think that might be quite bizarre. But no,
it's a slight change in the slight sort of approaches to the whole thing, admittedly. But as I say, he's channeling the inner spirit of Hector from Hector's house. I keep coming back to that. It is inevitable.
I think I'll stick to Hector's house rather than watching this one, Alex.
I mean, the only difference, major spoiler, is in this particular thing, he has two houses, one in Dulwich and one in the countryside. And, you know, they're almost mirror images, which is good. Jessica, what score would you give this one, just out of interest?
If we're scoring it like a film that's meant to have meaning and, you know, be like a cultural commentary, I'd probably give it like a 5. But as a thriller, it's like a 7. I had fun with it because if I was just looking at it as like just a fun movie night movie. It works well, I think, just as a regular thriller. And Hugh Bonneville, I always love him.
I'd go 6.5 because of Kelly MacDonald and, of course, the homage to Hector's house. Sarah?
Well, I only watched the trailer. I have to go on what my mates are saying. You know, I'm almost tempted to say piffle paffle. I do like Hugh Bonneville. In fact, I always wanted to marry Hugh Bonneville, mainly because I'd like to be.
But you ended up marrying John Britton. It's one and the same, really. Except John isn't a serial killer, thank the Lord.
I hope not. No, it is like being like with Mr. Brown from Paddington a bit here at times. I think I'll go with the general flow and say it's a no for me. I can't rate it. That's unfair because I haven't seen it. And I don't want to be unkind to Hugh Bonneville, but I won't be watching. No.
Makes perfect sense. Richard, I suspect you're going for a 3.
Well, Alex, again, you're back on form, I have to say, because, I mean, I'm amazed that you go to 6.5. I mean, I can understand Jessica just, as it were, sitting back and enjoying it as far as one could. But, I mean, the improbable plot, the stupidity of some of it, the imbecile, except the fact you can just walk into a house like this, the fact the characters don't behave like real people, and the fact Hugh Bonneville, I like Hugh Bonneville, but I like him, yes. But, I mean, Downton is scripted by Julian Fellowes, who knows what he's doing and does pretty well. No. But I mean, 3 would be very generous, you know. I think 2.
There we are. Interesting. Well, let's just jump around in a house of pain.
Jump, 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 jump
Well, it takes us neatly round to Natasha. Last week, I think you were heartily recommending to Sarah Huntley she should go and see Ticket to Paradise. Sarah, did you actually take Natasha's advice? Did you see George Clooney and Julia Roberts in action?
No, but I am going next week. And I am at cinema active. I'm going tonight to see the And Then There Were None. And I was at Bad Jews last night with Joshua Herman at the theatre. So, but I would love to hear all about this wonderful film. It looks rather good.
I'm sorry. I think your things are in my seat.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, come on.
You've got to be kidding me.
Excuse me, ma'am. I need to sit somewhere else. We used to be married.
Worst 19 years of my life.
We were only married for 5.
I'm counting the recovery.
In 4 days time...
Our daughter's gonna marry a guy she just met in Bali, millions of miles from home.
I just really want to kiss you. It's like I looked up for the first time and realized everything I ever wanted was right in front of me.
She's throwing her career away.
Just like her mother did, so I'm the only one who can stop her. She doesn't listen to him.
Oh, champagne!
Oh, 2, please.
Just leave the bottle. Thank you.
I won't let her throw her life away. We need to trick her into dumping him. As much as this will pain us both, we have to call a truce to make this work.
You have to be in lockstep.
Hey! Did you make a pact to not murder each other until you murder me first?
We are here for you, my love.
Yes, we're in lockstep.
Yes. Promise, no mean comments. Pretty sure you don't win anything for eating the whole pig. No arguing.
Get off it.
No passive aggression. What about aggressive aggression? Try to keep the snoring down.
I have a nasal strip.
It's a mystery you're still alone.
Mom, Dad, this is G'day.
On supposed to yes do G'day.
You learned that to make me look bad.
You don't need my help there.
Are you sure they're not sharks?
Come on, don't be a chicken.
We might be working with the sharks.
Come on.
Can't believe I got bit by a dolphin.
What's
wrong with you?
He said pressure. He said Georgia.
So what's the plan?
I say we steal the rings.
How do they look?
Disappointed. Do you think we're wrong?
We're not wrong.
Who are we to say that Lily doesn't know what's best for herself?
I cannot believe you.
What are you talking about?
She found the rings.
Where?
In Mom's bag.
I knew it.
What?
You clean up pretty good.
Here you go.
It's not for the faint of heart.
This is not his first rodeo.
Okay, let's go. Let's go.
Can we get something a little more age appropriate for these two?
Here we go. Which one?
There's only one.
I see two. Oh, yeah.
Dad, please stop doing that. Oh my God.
I'm praying for an asteroid.
Ticket to Paradise, and I shall happily break into some of the thoughts of House of Pain later, which of course sees George Clooney's character do some fabulous dad dancing. Richard, I noticed you're modelling yourself on a kind of George Clooney-esque look, really, in many ways these days. So what are your thoughts on this rom-com to end all rom-coms brought to you by the director of such delights as The Exotic Marigold Hotel, Mamma Mia, and more? Is it an Ollie Parker extravaganza of joy?
Well, I mean, I enjoyed it. Yes. I have to say, it's something I've seen a couple of reviews that were 2 stars, which seems to me unkind, because what you had was a very, very good opportunity. And if Natasha was recommending it, I'm sure she did for this reason as well. That executive producers George Clooney and Julia Roberts, the reason to go and see it is just to enjoy the fact that they have excellent chemistry together. And I mean, it's from this point of view, you know, no one wears a tux like George, and fair enough, you could pick holes in the plot. It's only meant to be a fairy story, a rom-com fantasy. You've got prosperous David, played by George Clooney, and also high-flying art dealer Georgia, played by Julia Roberts, travelling to Bali after hearing their daughter Lily, played by Caitlin Dever, is marrying a guy called Didi, played by Maxime Boutier, who's very into harvesting seaweed, and they don't want her to repeat the mistake they made, which is to fall for each other, but it was far too soon, and they, goodness me, they regretted it ever since, with lots of squabbles and lots of ups and downs, which make for a generally very amiable script and viewing, simply because they are exceptional Hollywood pros, the very top of the trade market, and as I say, the reason for seeing the movie is the fact that they're bickering and they're squabbling and so forth and so on. It's great fun. She has a love interest in a commercial pilot, Paul, played by Lucas Bravo, who also pitches up in Bali, and Lily has gone there with Ren, played by Billy Lourd. This is a sort of, I mean, it's a colourful, entertaining rom-com with a good cast and lots of preposterous situations, thunderstorms that people, they get drenched in, or the fact that they're looking for pigs to slaughter and they don't get very far, all of that.
Not really good for the vegan viewers then, Richard, I would have thought.
Well, I mean, I think it is a very, very typical type of rom-com where you've been lucky enough, despite the fact it isn't subtle, it isn't meant to be, it's just meant to be enjoyed. So it's predictable, it's colourful, and it's got quite a lot of silly scenes in it, but it's a fantasy. So, you know, what do you expect of it? You've got Clooney and you've got Roberts, and they handle the comic situations pretty deftly, and climactically, I think that's proven because the timing is pretty good in some of the gags. Okay, some of them are laboured, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. Old Parker directs indeed.
There you are. Pack it up, pack it in. Let me begin. I came to win. Battle me, that's a sin. I won't ever slack up. Punk, you better back up. Try and play the role and yo, the whole crew will act up. Get up, stand up, come on, throw your hands up. If you've got the feeling, jump up, touch the ceiling. Mugs, let the funk flow, something's talking junk. Yo, I'll bust him in the eye and then I'll take the punks home and jump around. Classic lyrics, which are almost Shakespearean in their essence. As indeed featured in the Wondrous Movie. I mean, it's something which I think Lambda should actually develop more jump around lyrics, Sarah, since it's important.
I think I'm very perky today, Alex. I don't know what's happened. We've gone into perky, you know. It's just these words.
It's the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, we're into the October equinox. Well,
also, you painted for the listeners and all of us, Richard in a Richard Curtis movie in Hampstead, and you know the whimsical thing of him jumping into the lakes for a swim and his rom-com there. Everything is very exciting this morning on this show. And Natasha, I definitely will go and see it, I promise.
That's okay, Sarah. I believe you.
No, I am. Clearly. I'm going next week. I have to go and see it now after all this, what you were doing, your little rap there, Alex, weren't you?
Well, I mean, some might say it was a little rap, some might add a C to the word, but what the hey, it's all connected in its own magical system.
I didn't realise Rosh Hashanah was going to have this effect on you. It's calming for most people, but for you, you've got your horn and you're blowing away there.
There you go. Natasha, so I take it you did recommend this movie last week to Sarah. Have you tested it yourself, or was it just a blind recommendation based solely on the trailer?
No, this is a great movie. I love this movie. I think Richard summed it up very well. I think it's one of those movies that you just sort of, you don't go in there expecting, you know, Shakespeare and it to be very serious and the plot to be the most magnificent thing. It's not like that. If fans of Mamma Mia, if you like Mamma Mia, I would say it's that sort
of... Or Jump Around by House of Pain.
All the good stuff. I think it's one of those sort of movies where it's great for family viewing, just letting your hair down, just letting the magic of Julia and George just take you on a journey. And it's just great fun. I really enjoyed it. Yes, some of the themes are interesting. A little bit of questioning over, you know, the gaslighting of the parents and how much we should meddle in our children's affairs and yada, yada, yada. But hey, it's a fun movie. The chemistry between the two is electric. I really, really liked it. Yes, the ending is predictable, but hey, it's one of those kind of movies. That's why we go and see it, right? We want the big smiles and the warm, fuzzy feeling when we're leaving. And that's what this movie will do. So if that's what you want from this movie, go for it, is what I say.
And your score, Natasha?
Good eight.
Probably mirroring Richard's, I would have thought. I think you're an eight for this one, I would have thought. Or will you go seven?
Well, I was just simply taking it at face value and agreeing with what Natasha just said. I mean, I'd go 6, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I'd certainly compromise at 7. I mean, look, they've been fairly tough times. This is an opportunity to see 2 top Hollywood stars in roles that suit them. So I will compromise, Alex. Yes, all
Jessica,
right.
But Jessica, is this one for you? Have you already seen it? Or is it a case of, I don't know, I'm too concerned about Hurricane Ian and what that's likely to be doing to my homeland of the United States of America.
There's a hurricane? I need to message.
It's all right, friends. You won't find out about that in Ireland and in Dublin. You can forget that. No. So the World Centre's around Dublin. The only time they look abroad to the USA is when they've got a Garth Crooks concert on.
Oh, yes, I have learned that. And I missed out on my chance to get a cowboy hat in Ireland, which is so sad. But for this movie, I think I haven't seen it yet, but the fact that it's just like associated with Mamma Mia is great. I think that already gives it a plus. And I fully support just fluffy, happy movies that won't make you think too hard and are just meant to help you escape for a little bit. I think that that's very important. And I appreciate any movie that can do that. Plus, I love the 2000s rom-com vibes this whole trailer had. It's nice. I feel like we need just fun, happy movies.
Makes perfect sense in so many ways. And spoke, of course, Jessica. I don't know, last week, of course, you were unable to actually join the team when Sarah was reviewing Meet Joe Black. I think you thoroughly enjoyed that as well. Did you not?
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's the opposite of this, where that's a romance movie that really makes you think. And it will really kind of dig deep into your heart. And I thought it was gorgeous. Everything from the acting to the color palette to the music to the plot, everything about it was just gorgeous. It was a wonderful movie.
So there we are, Meet Joe Black and Ticket to Paradise, the ideal kind of double-edged rejoinder with a sandwich of Hugh Bonneville and Hector's house perhaps could be put into place there if you fancy a bit of tagging and graffiti artist work as well, which is important. Richard, will you be checking out the live-action version of Pinocchio, which we discussed last week, or is it a case of no, even though I only ever see the live-action version of Disney movies, so I've never seen the animated version, you will be leaving that to Disney Plus?
I may well be leaving it to Disney Plus, but it's something, obviously. It's
Tom Hanks.
Alexandra Gonzalez Inarritu directs, am I right?
No, we're actually sort of looking at the wrong Disney there. We're looking at Rob Zemeckis, who directs with Tom Hanks in the lead role.
Oh, no, this is not a movie I'd heard about. I have to say, I was in the forthcoming London Film Festival. There is another.
That's the Guillermo del Toro number, of course.
That's Guillermo del Toro. Yes, yes, you're right there. And it's, the festival lineup is impressive. And I do also think that it'll be a chance perhaps to, with Amsterdam coming up, a whole series of interesting movies. The quality of film. Well, wait till next week where we discuss a certain link to the mouse trap, which I think Sarah is going to acquaint herself with. So it will be interesting to see what she thinks of that. But I'm looking forward to the quality overall of movies that are more easily available, rising a bit, looking at the list of upcoming films. And the London Film Festival will be a very good opportunity to see some of these. And I hope to get into them, including, of course, the next Daniel Craig as a detective, who we all remember, Knives Out.
Are we looking at Knives Out 2 here?
Yes, and that's closing the festival. It should be fascinating, I hope. Knives Out's the sort of movie that we can do more of.
Yeah. Or indeed, probably a description of the House of Windsor in subsequent months. No, surely things will improve on that basis.
Alex.
Well, I don't know. Will he publish? Will he not publish? Will she be upset? Who knows from that point of view? Have they actually reconciled? Is it all going to be a happy ending?
Well, from what I can gather, it doesn't seem to me they've reconciled. But as far as the publication of the book's concerned, I mean, any report and rumour, it won't be substantiated. But it is actually a serious issue. And what is particularly making the royals anxious, and you can see why. And also, I think the Sussexes, and you can see why. There is no doubt whatever that whether or not you're a royalist or indeed a Republican or whatever your position on the Sussexes and the rest of the royal family, I think almost everybody had a very deep affection for the Queen. This is not a period where a sane person, in my view, or sensible person, would publish a memoir that was going to cause further discord. Almost anything in a memoir, especially when you've had a breach and there's still this rift, as far as we understand it, almost everything in it, in certain areas, and I'm particularly referring to areas dealing with Camilla, because obviously what William and Harry actually thought when Charles was rehabilitating the non-negotiable Camilla after Diana's death, none of that's ever been discussed. So, you know, there would be a lot in this that could be or might be hypersensitive. There's another book that's just being published, Courtiers by Valentine Lowe, who's the much respected Times Royal correspondent. He was involved in investigating a story which involved allegations of bullying, which Meghan strongly denies, bullying of palace staff, and that apparently reappears. The book's been slightly postponed, but it will be interesting to see where all this ends up, because so far as the Sussex is concerned, I do think it is in their interest to get some sort of relationship going with the royal family, because apart from her mother, there is no member of either side of the family who, apart from Beatrice and Eugenie, who appear to be friendly with them. And that isn't an advantage if you want to be a philanthropist or go into politics, as she might. But equally, as far as the royal family are concerned, they want to close, or should certainly want to close down, a obviously dangerous, look at Oprah, look at the way that cost.
And any truth in the rumour, Richard, that in the upcoming documentary series, the roles of Harry and Meghan are going to be played by George Clooney and Julia Roberts to kind of, you know, again, bridge that gap and provide a kind of sense of closure and reunification, perhaps?
Well, wait for The Crown. I mean, there'll be we won't have Harry and Meghan portrayed in, but what we will have is Diana and Charles, and also Imelda Staunton will be the Queen, and expect more fireworks when that series opens, because I mean they invented enough trouble for the royals in past episodes. This is set in the 1990s, where they don't have to invent it.
And there we have it, another interesting summation of matters. Natasha, you have raised your hand physically as opposed to virtually, which is very good when we're dealing with these kind of online systems.
Would it be all right if I quickly touched on Do Revenge, the Black film? Is that all right?
Yes.
Yeah. This is the latest one on Netflix. It was released on the 16th of September. It's been trending quite high in the charts. It's based on Hitchcock's Strangers on a Train. So I don't know if anyone's sort of familiar. Rich is nodding, so he's familiar with the premise. Yeah, and so is Sarah. It's set in a sort of a American sort of high school. So it's sort of masquerades a little bit as a teenage rom-com film. We start with Dre, who's the first of our two women, and Richard will probably be able to know where this is going. She's kind of the it queen bee of the senior high school, until unfortunately her sex tape gets leaked by her boyfriend and everything blows up. She ends up in quite a bit of trouble over it. She's the one who gets the blame for it. She gets sort of ostracized publicly for it, and of course she doesn't take that very well. She's angry. He seems to get away scot-free. She goes away for the summer and they come back for the final year. Over the summer, she's met lovely Eleanor, who is transferring as an exchange student to the school. And she's also got a chip on her shoulder, this time with another woman in the another girl in their year called Clarissa, who apparently has been spreading some nasty rumors about her ever since she came out to her. So as you can see, we've got two rather jaded women in the spotlight here. And as with the traditional Hitchcock film, they decide to trade their revenge. So you have Dre, who's going to take down Clarissa, who sort of destroyed Eleanor's social life. And then you have Eleanor, who's going to take down Max, who is Dre's ex-boyfriend. And up until about halfway through this movie, it seemed like your average teenage coming of age movie, right? It's like your average...
Much beloved of Richard, of course.
Of course. And then you get to about 40 minutes to go. And being based on Hitchcock, that's when you start to see it rear its head a little bit, because the psycho meter gets ramped up to full throttle and things start happening that I was not expecting. So I would definitely say this is a movie of two halves. If you want something that's a little bit unexpected, maybe go for this movie. I'm not sure how believable the plot is, certainly as it gets towards the end when it gets a little bit weird. Is it satisfying though? Yes. As a revenge film, I would say the ending does feel kind of satisfying, which is what you kind of hope for as it's kind of been building up all the way through. Do I think the acting was good? Yeah, I think that definitely Camila Mendes and Maya Hawke, who are the two main women in this, I thought they played their roles well. They had good chemistry with each other. And I found some of the love interest throughout the movie quite unexpected as well, which it wasn't the typical, I didn't see it coming from the first 5 minutes, which is always nice to see as well. So yeah, if you're wanting a classic high school chick flick, maybe this one isn't for you because it gets a little bit crazy. But if you want something a little bit unexpected, a little bit more fruity with a twist, a little bit thrillerish at the end, then yeah, this might be quite interesting.
And the title once again, Natasha?
Sorry?
The title once again?
Do Revenge. I would give it a 7.
There you are. Do Revenge, or just do one. Perhaps we can actually go all the way down the line to the film noir-esque version of Hector's House. And again, you'll probably be able to actually, if you watch the episodes of Hector's House, probably trace most grand movies have actually got their roots in that, including, of course, the recent Hugh Bonneville scenario from that perspective. There we have it. Who knows whether this will also follow in the footsteps of New York Real Talk and have its own YouTube channel before too long. Yes, it is happening. We're gradually actually rolling this out onto YouTube as well. The beta testing is already taking place. But for the moment, from Richard Fitzwilliams and Sarah Huntley in London, and Natasha Wanton in Australia, Jessica Burtis in Dublin, Ireland, huge thanks and keep watching the movies.
Jessica Burtis flying the flag for North Carolina across the solar system.
Well, Stoptober, it's an annual event. It's with us again. And of course, what's it all about? Stopping smoking, clearly. But inevitably, there are still challenges with respect to this. Now, we've said in the past, probably the best thing is never start at all. But for those people who have and want to actually make that very important step to good health, we've got a fabulous soul to actually help us now. He's an ace media medic, of course, and psychologist. It's the fabulous Dr. Max Pemberton. How are you, Max?
Hello, I'm okay, Alex.
Well, great to connect with your good self as ever. I mean, I had hoped, perhaps naively, a few years ago that maybe Stoptober would actually phase out gradually as people actually realised that giving up smoking was not great from that point of view. But it is still with us. So what is your advice for people who are thinking about, well, let's make a start for Stoptober and let's stop that smoking?
Yeah, so, I mean, I kind of also shared your optimism because I kind of thought that, you know, there will come a point, and I'm still optimistic there will come a point where nobody smokes anymore. I think that, you know, the research shows that there is still a group of people that are still struggling. You know, I think that over the years, several things have happened. We now know much more about the effects of smoking than, say, sort of 50 or 60 years ago. And we sort of understand the you know, the very complicated and sort of wide ranging impact that smoking has on health. And I think also we've got to a stage where it's now less socially acceptable. You know, I remember when I started smoking back in the 90s, it seemed that everybody smoked. You could smoke in restaurants. I even remember when I started as a doctor, kind of the early 2000s, you could smoke in hospital. And we'd all be sort of working in A&E, and we would all kind of go off to the smoking room. So they'd all be these doctors and
Max,
nurses like,
I was
puffing
always
away.
Staggered when I went to hospital with our sister station, Southside Broadcasting, James Cook University Hospital. It was almost a badge of honour that people would be attached to their drips, they would wheel themselves out on their drips and they'd still light up a cigarette. You just thought, not good, really, not good.
I know. But sort of certainly, you know, I think since the smoking ban came in place, sort of 15 plus years ago now, when that came in place, I think it sort of that started the sort of sea change where it becomes less socially acceptable. However, you know, there are still people that do smoke and that, you know, I think are very keen to try and address that. But also there are still people that are still smoking that, you know, come through. I've been quite surprised at the number of youngsters that have started up recently, aside from vaping, have actually started up smoking recently. I went on holiday over the summer and somebody brought their teenage child who, well, he's a child, I say he's 19, and he was there smoking. And I thought, how odd. And he wouldn't drink because he thought it wasn't healthy, and he wouldn't vape because he thought it wasn't healthy. And I was thinking, you're doing like the most dangerous thing you could possibly do.
Obviously lighting up and setting fire to dried grass and actually putting it into it, in inhaling it in, that's obviously not mine. Yeah, it's a crazy world, Max. Crazy. However, yeah. One of the things that research has revealed is that if a smoker can actually make it to 28 days smoke-free, and there are, of course, 31 days in October, so, you know, 28 days smoke-free, they're 5 times more likely to quit for good. So for those folk who realise they may have actually gone down this path and they haven't seen the ads, I mean, I recall ads well before your time in the 60s and 70s where it demonstrated how it wasn't cool to smoke. If you kind of spent all your money on cigarettes, you wouldn't be able to buy the good things in life, like musical items, all sorts of other aspects within that, bikes and so on and so forth. But again, from that perspective, and I say, given the fact that we've gradually shifted away from the mass media routine, unless you're into archive media, in which, yes, you will still see Lady Penelope and Thunderbirds lighting up a cigarette. Don't do it. You'll set fire to yourself. But that 28-day rule is important. And it does mean that if you take this Stoptober thing to the fore, it can help you.
Absolutely. So, I mean, one of the messages we're trying to get across this Stoptober is this 28 days. And I think part of that, as a former smoker myself, I know that the idea of stopping smoking was quite daunting. It felt quite overwhelming, quite anxiety provoking. And of course, actually, for smokers, if you feel a bit anxious and stressed, what do? You reach for your cigarettes. So the idea of taking that away, you're going to put the idea that someone's putting themselves in a situation that's stressful, and you're taking away their coping mechanism for dealing with that stress, it's really anxiety provoking and, you know, really daunting. So one of the ways of kind of breaking it down is to go, look, don't worry about it too much. We're just saying 28 days. Now, we know that actually after 28 days, people, that initial anxiety is kind of dissipated and actually think, do you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. So we're kind of focused on the 28 days thing and also confidence. So we're really pushing this idea of what psychologists call it self-efficacy. So it's this idea of, it's kind of, if you believe in something, it actually makes it more likely that you'll achieve it. And this is really, really true with smoking. So people who have confidence and they believe that they will be able to be successful are actually, just that belief makes them more likely they will be successful. So we know that kind of people feel more confident, so they have that more self-belief if they've prepared in advance, if they've planned stuff and they've got a plan. So they have, like, you know, all the strategies, all the resources in place before they make that quit attempt. So that if they then, you know, kind of inevitably have a bit of a stumble, that, you know, have a bit of a blip, and they start, you know, experiencing withdrawals, they're not sure what to do, they've got all that already in place to help them cope with it. And actually then we know that when somebody then overcomes that, so they kind of they panic a bit, they're worried a bit, and they then manage to then get past that, that in itself also then feeds into their self-confidence. Because they think, oh, do you know, I thought I was gonna trip up there, but actually I didn't. I managed to keep going. You know, I've got the support of all these people around me. I've got all these kind of tools in place. I've managed to keep going. Actually, I definitely can do this. It kind of feeds into it. It's like a positive feedback. So that's kind of another thing we're really pushing, is this idea of confidence. Come on, you can do it. And honestly, I smoke 40 a day. If I can do it, anybody could do it, I promise you.
Well, I mean, it does tie in, as you said, not only to confidence, but also the PQP, the personal quit plan, which does demonstrate that if you've got support from local stop smoking services, and there are lots of them around, either in Lincoln or Teesside or other areas within that, and support structure, it will help you break that barrier. Slightly different note, Max, I must admit, if you look historically back at the times where people in the medical profession would actually prescribe smoking for people to actually calm their nerves, etc., thankfully we moved away from that. But I often wonder, maybe maybe in 100 years from now, we'll realise that excessive use of social media and TikTok might also be dangerous to one's health as well. But that's another line entirely. let's go back to Stoptober, of course. The challenge itself, is it literally just a case of you go online, you find your pack, you find your resource pack, and you make a start?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of ways. I suppose the thing is, the NHS has been, you know, smoking costs the NHS a lot of money to treat all of the different kind of complications that arise, the health complications that arise from smoking. So there's been lots and lots of resources for years and years around. And kind of the idea of Stoptober is partly to kind of pull all those resources together so that there's one big place that everyone can go. If they're not sure how to start or where to start, they just go to the Stoptober website run by the NHS. And then it's got everything there. And they can, as you say, they can kind of then develop their own quit plan, so that they kind of pulled together the different resources, the different things that they think is going to be helpful for them, because of course everybody is different, and so what works for one person might not work for somebody else. So we're kind of pulling it all together, and also it's that idea of kind of focusing everybody's mind on going, right, do you know what? Because I suppose, you know, I had this when I was thinking of stopping smoking. It took me years. I knew I wanted to do it, but I was always like, oh, I'll do it next month. Oh, well, I've got a wedding coming up, I'll do it in this time. Oh, well, then I've got that big party, I'll do it then. And suddenly the months, you know, the weeks turn into months, turn into years. So the idea of Stoptober, I suppose, is to kind of focus people on going, look, now, it's like, don't put it off any longer. Just give it a go now. There's tons of stuff out there. We're going to help you. Just try now. So in October, this is the time to do it.
And as an ex-smoker, Max, you clearly go through that whole process. You're well aware, presumably, of all of the additional goodies that smoking can provide for you in terms of cancer, in terms of cardiothoracic issues, in terms of poor general health, in terms of other sort of aspects, etc. Is it also important that people acknowledge that don't do this? It's almost self-harm when you smoke. Just actually work through the process of don't smoke. As we said at the start of the piece, maybe don't even start. But if you have started, then maybe something like Stoptober can help you have that confidence to take it to quitting the habit completely.
Well, I would say, obviously, if you don't smoke, definitely don't start. And I, you know, one of my regrets in life is starting smoking, although I would also say I'm very sympathetic towards smokers. I'm not one of those kind of cantankerous ex-smokers at all. I work with people, or I've spent years actually working with people, homeless people and people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol. So working in addiction services. And I have got untold sympathy, actually, for people and understanding for people who are addicted to substances. And that includes nicotine. And you know, I've never vilify a smoker in any way. I think, and ultimately, I think it's about personal responsibility, and people take responsibility for their own lives and they make choices about their lives. I suppose what I would encourage is maybe just thinking, if you are at that stage, or maybe even just contemplating stopping smoking, there is so much out there to kind of help you. Nobody's going to be judgmental. We're going to try and support you, and we're going to care for you. And we want it to be successful. We want you to get to become smoke free, because it would, you know, aside from all the health stuff, it makes your life just much better. You have more money, you can taste things, you can smell things you didn't before, you feel healthier, you've got more energy. It's like such a positive experience. And also, I would say, from somebody who's quit smoking, and this might sound a bit strange, but it was such a massive thing in my mind that when I did it, I really held on to that in other challenges that I had in my life. And I thought, do you know what, you know, other stuff, like I wrote a book, I've written a couple of books, and I remember one of the books I was writing, I was really struggling, and I recalled and thought, do you know what, I've managed to stop smoking. I thought I'd never be able to do that, and I've done it. So do you know what, I can definitely finish this book. And so I've kind of used it actually as a kind of a thing to hold on to, and gone, do you know what, I'm actually much more strong-willed, I'm much more powerful than I sometimes think I am.
Max, let's remind people where they can go to find out further information. We mentioned it earlier. Where would you point people in terms of the great World Wide Web?
So it's just very straightforward. You just need to search for Stoptober, and that will take you to the NHS Stoptober website.
Max, as we knew it was going to be, it's been awesome connecting with your good self, ACE Media Medic and psychologist. We'll throw in those last two questions as well, actually. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the midweek drive today? Has it been okay for you?
Definitely. It's been brilliant. Really good. I like your background with the rainbow. It's lovely.
Got to be positive. That's the important thing. So the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to join us again? Will you come back and speak to us of matters medical in the not too distant future?
Alex, I'd absolutely love to. Thank you.